Welcome to the Sweat Elite podcast. This is Matt, the co-host of the Sweat Elite podcast and founder at Sweat Elite. Thanks for tuning into this episode. This episode is all about ketones. Now, I'm assuming that more or less all of you listeners have at least heard of the word ketosis. I would guess many of you have heard of the word ketones, and I would guess a very small percentage of you have actually tried taking a ketone supplement. I was lucky enough in this conversation to speak with one of the founders of one of the leading ketone producing companies, Michael Brand, the founder of HVMN. HVMN produce the supplement called Ketone IQ that I can speak to at length because I have been taking it more or less every day now for the past 6 months since I was first introduced to the product through an elite athlete runner friend of mine based here in the USA. Shortly after I was introduced to the product and started taking it every day, and I noticed some pretty decent benefits in the context of energy, recovery, more than anything though, mental clarity when it comes to long bouts of not only exercise, but even probably more so work when it comes to video editing or having to write a lot of emails, do a lot of really intense mental work. I've found Ketone IQ to be exceptionally beneficial. Shortly after I was introduced to the product and started taking it, I reached out to HVMN to see if they'd be interested in partnering with Sweat Elite. I was very excited when HVMN agreed to be a partner of Sweat Elite so that we can offer Sweat Elite podcast listeners and Sweat Elite YouTube channel watchers a 20% off discount at hvmn.com when purchasing Ketone IQ. If you are based in the USA and would like to try a small sample of HVMN's Ketone IQ and you're near a Sprouts grocery store, you can head down to your local Sprouts and purchase one shot of the Ketone IQ supplement. So that's for those based in the USA. If you would like to order a larger quantity and score that 20% off discount, simply head to hvmn.com and use the code SWEATELITE at checkout. You can also find a link in the description of this podcast to take you straight to the website. Of course, if you're based outside of the USA, you can use that discount as well, and you can try HVMN's Ketone IQ out yourself. I don't want to speak any more about Ketone IQ in this introduction because Michael does such a good job in this conversation of talking about what ketones are and how they benefit endurance athletes. So I'll transition over to the conversation I had with Michael shortly. Sweat Elite will be holding its fifth Kenya running training camp in a little over 3 months' time, and places on the camp are booking up fast. We've had an absolute blast on our last four training camps with between 14 and 22 people joining from around the world, and it's worth noting that we have no standard to join the Sweat Elite training camps. You don't have to be an elite runner. You can, of course, be an elite runner, but we've also had very new runners join the Sweat Elite Kenya training camp, and there is absolutely no standard, a very common question that we get. But what's included? There is absolutely everything once you make your way to Eldoret in Kenya. Once you land, we pick you up from the airport, we take you to one of the best guest houses in Iten. That includes Wi-Fi, full board, which means three meals a day, coffee in between those meals. It also includes group training sessions, it includes social activities, education sessions by professional athletes and coaches, and even things like shopping trips, trips to waterfalls, and so much more. They are so much fun. I'm really looking forward to hosting this fifth one starting on the 26th of August and running through to the 24th of September. And you can come for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 4 weeks. If you'd like to learn more about the Sweat Elite Kenya Training Camp, go to www.sweatelite.co/Kenya. You can also find the link in the description of this podcast episode. Michael Brand, welcome to the Sweat Elite podcast.
Matt, it's great to be here.
Really appreciate you joining. And I guess a good place to start would be something a little bit different to how I'd normally start an interview on the Sweat Elite podcast. But when people ask you what you do and then don't know you at all, you've met someone at a dinner party, how do you answer that question?
The way that I explain Ketone IQ from the get-go is to say that the human body has always made ketones for 300,000 years. If you're fasting, if you're starving, if you're running around on the savanna, anytime you're low blood sugar, your body makes something called ketones. What my company does is we figure out a way to make a pure ketone that provides that same fuel just in a directly bioavailable format in a shot.
Good answer. Yeah, for the basic way to answer it. If people are familiar with ketones, to try and understand, I guess, how they would help an endurance athlete, we're going to dive right into this and all sorts of different topics I've got in mind. You know, I've mentioned on podcasts before, on YouTube videos, I've been using the HVMO and ketones. How would you describe to people how that would help an endurance athlete?
When you're an endurance athlete, you have different fuel systems inside of your body. Well, every human has different fuel systems inside of your body. Endurance athletes in particular are really dialed. That's a big part of the training. That's a big part of what makes or breaks a race, is how you've trained your fueling systems and then how adequately you're fueling on those on race day and the days leading up. So when you're training for a marathon, a big part of what you're doing is developing metabolic flexibility across your fueling systems. There's really two main ways that you fuel. One is glucose-based, sugar-based, carbohydrate-based, all using these interchangeably, like your carbohydrate system. And the other is your fat and ketone system. Those are your two main batteries that you have. There's advantages and disadvantages to both. Your carbohydrate system, also known as your glucose, it's stored as glycogen, your sugar system, that's all one. That is really powerful and punchy. So if you're running a shorter effort, if you're running a 5K, you're going to be highly reliant on that. The major downfall of that is you cannot store that much carbohydrate and you burn through it. For longer efforts, half marathon, certainly marathon, anything ultra marathon, you can't have enough glycogen on deck to fuel the whole effort. Even if you're eating along the way, eating a goo shot or Morton every 5 minutes, like you will be gated by how much you can digest and downstream metabolize that carbohydrate. So our bodies have this fat and ketone system where it's 100 times more capacity. So you can store a small amount of carbohydrate, you can store a massive amount of fat, and then that fat gets turned into ketones to fuel your brain and your body. And what you're doing as a marathoner, as you're training, is you're developing metabolic flexibility. So all those zone two runs, if you do a zone two fasted run, like lower intensity where you're not needing to pull from your sugar system. The point of the zone two run is that you're going at a lower intensity such that you can be primarily fueling off of your fat system. And what's going on is, as an athlete, is that you're developing metabolic flexibility. You're developing enzymes to turn fat into ketones and then to use ketones as cellular ATP. And so you're getting better at using what's typically like this massive slow energy system. As a marathoner, you're getting relatively faster at using that fat system.
Sure. Ultimately, which should result in potentially being able to use less carbs earlier on. Am I right in saying that? I did, you know, obviously before I was familiar with HVMN, I was watching a whole lot of YouTube videos and doing my own research to try and understand how this worked. And one sort of piece of content I came across was, and do correct me if this is seeing it the wrong way, but the way this could potentially be assisting endurance athletes is you're utilizing the ketones earlier on in the effort to save carbohydrates for the later stages of it. So you can essentially go longer without taking any more carbs by using ketones. Is that accurate to say?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. The way we've been talking about it so far is that these systems exist regardless of if you have an exogenous ketone. You have your fat ketone system, you have your carbohydrate system. Our innovation is that we have a pure ketone dial, and it's called Ketone IQ, that goes into this system that your energy demand is going to be what it is. So you're running a certain pace, you have a certain level of fitness, you have a certain energy demand that's either coming from carbohydrates or that's coming from fat and ketones. And if you have trained more so your body is able to use fat, that's helpful. If you've carb loaded in the day or two leading up to the race, that's going to be helpful. If you're also drinking Ketone IQ, it's like another highway lane into the turnpike. It's another parallel energy source that can be used. That, you're right, it spares your glycogen for later, because it's, if you have an energy demand of X, it's like, where is that coming from?
Yep.
And if you are able to have multiple inputs into that, then you can delay the demand of depleting any one of those inputs.
Sure. And up until relatively recently, I'd love for you to inform us how recently, the state of, well, I mean, state of ketosis or activating ketones in the brain was primarily done, well, it was only done by fasting, right? And I mean, where do the origins come from for consuming ketones? When did this start? How did you get involved? How did you become interested? And then we can get onto how you started HVM.
Yeah, super interesting. Like, the human body has been making and using ketones for 300,000 years. Yeah. If you're on the savanna, there's no Coca-Cola on the savanna. There's no like high fructose corn syrup. There's no like hyper concentrated bolus of sugar on the savanna. We're often going days, weeks without a lot of carbohydrate. We're endurance hunting and depleting our carbohydrate stores. At the same time, humans have this massive brain, especially for our body size. We have the largest brain, and that has a massive brain. The brain has a massive energy demand to it. So if you're in this state where you're low on blood sugar, and in order to not keel over and die, our bodies adapted the ability to turn fat into ketones for brain energy. Importantly, fat can't be used for brain energy. Our blood-brain barrier does not allow fat in. Semi-permeable, like to protect the brain, only selectively certain things can get in. Fat cannot get in. So in order, when we're in a low carbohydrate state, historically, you need to be able to make ketones in order for your brain to properly function and maintain ability. So that's been going on for 300,000 years. 100 years ago, so early 20th century, doctors first discovered the ketogenic diet as a way to address seizures. So seizures, epileptic seizures, have to do with a dysregulation of metabolism in the brain, where your brain is basically not properly metabolizing glucose. So if you completely stop eating carbohydrates, and that induces your body to then make ketones and have ketones be the predominant energy source for your body and your brain, importantly, they showed a reduction in instances of seizures, like massive, like people stopped having seizures when they're doing the ketogenic diet. So that's early 20th century, the first therapeutic application of like of the ketogenic diet, of intentionally forcing people to get into ketosis for a specific desired end state. You fast forward 100 years, like early 20th century, the Department of Defense, DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, they started looking at, well, they look at a lot of interesting kind of fringe forward-looking technologies, and they started looking specifically at ketones, asking the question of, hey, like, we know that ketones have this special interface with our brain. We know that when we make our bodies make a ketone, it's super efficient. So what would happen if we isolated a ketone and made it directly drinkable? So there's some early proofs of concept in the early 20th century where it was like massively expensive, $20,000 a dose, like tasted like super crazy. But the basic science was there, like the proof of concept was there. It sat on a shelf for quite some time until my co-founder and I in 2017, we were the first to launch to the world a ketone ester drink. We were the first to go and make, you know, 100,000 units of it. Shortly thereafter, we got a contract with the Department of Defense Special Operations Command. Again, the military had always been interested in super fuels for soldiers for physically, cognitively demanding missions. And once we ramped the manufacturing, basically productized it, commercialized it, worked out a number of the kinks there. Our first big customer on it was the Department of Defense, and we did a lot of interesting studies there. I can talk more about that. They basically validated exogenous ketones as a nutritional primitive, as a super fuel that helps for physically and cognitively demanding missions. And then it's rolled from there. And a year and a half ago, we took our technology to the commercial world, brought the price and the palatability to a spot where it's accessible. I'm not gonna say universally accessible. It's $4.95 a shot. For some people, that's a steal. For some people, that's out of their price range. But it's a lot cheaper than it used to be, and it's now within the range of, if you have a latte or if you have a CBD drink or you have a protein shake, like it's in the pantheon of like, you know, $5 performance or recovery add-on is a known category that people are willing to invest into.
Yeah. Well, very well explained. Would you mind touching on some of those studies that you mentioned? That when you know, obviously the Department of Defense is a fantastic first customer, by the way. But you mentioned that there were some studies behind that deal that you were interested in.
Yeah, the DoD from the start was really interested in hypoxia, which is low oxygen, so altitude. So at like 20,000 feet of altitude, your blood oxygenation will decrease. So at sea level, you're at 100% blood oxygenation. The measure is SpO2. Your blood oxygenation is 100 at sea level. At 20,000 feet, it goes down to 70%, which leads to a decrement, a decrease in physical performance, cognitive performance. You need oxygen to do metabolism, to make ATP in your muscle cells, in your heart, in your brain. Like, you need oxygen. So you'd expect to see a decrement of performance. That hypoxic context was just a high interest area to the DoD for special operators. So we've done a whole host of studies there and have seen that ketones in that hypoxic environment rescue significantly cognitive efficiency. They raise your blood oxygenation level, not quite to sea level, but like somewhere in between, and they make you more efficient. So one of the really interesting measures that we did, it was in hypoxia, so it was simulated altitude where you're wearing like the mask, like Bane from Batman. So you're wearing the mask. So it's like 20,000 feet of oxygen, and then rucking, so carrying weights at an incline, so matching an operator context. And then at the end of all that, doing target practice and seeing how accurate. And again, you'd expect a decrement in performance due to the altitude. Mm-hmm. And what ketones did was they decreased the amount of decrement. So basically improved the cognitive efficiency relative to what you would expect to see, which is really exciting. And there's been a number of other studies that we've done, that other groups have done. They've seen ketones work in different contexts. The highlight point on all of it, because there's been a lot of studies done on different measures. Some have shown more effects, some have shown null effect. The mental model that I have on the space is that the brain as a governing body, a lot of people have heard of the central governor, this concept developed by Tim Noakes a couple decades ago, really popularized by Alex Hutchinson, who wrote this book called Endure. This idea of the central governor, that like when you get tired, it's not because your quadricep is out of battery juice, it's because your brain can't tell your legs to shut up anymore. It's like you've run out of central governor willpower to be able to direct the muscle movement. And that ketones, to be fair, are flowing through your whole body and bloodstream everywhere. They like would be present in your quad muscle, they're present in your brain, they're present in your heart. But that the dominant effect that we're seeing is the brain mediated effect, where having a little ketones in your quad maybe incrementally helpful there, but having ketones available in your brain, because again, your brain can't use fat when you're low blood sugar, when you're on mile 18 of a marathon, all your fuel systems are decreased. If you have a increase in ketones, if you've had an exogenous ketone, if you had ketone IQ, then you have more energy that's available for your brain. Your brain really likes ketones, like very ketone greedy. And so you just feel more like the subjective experience, I feel, a lot of folks feels like more just turned on. Like you just feel like you have more in you than you should. Like it doesn't feel like mile 18. It feels like mile 14. Like you feel like not as depleted as you should on a mental basis.
Mm. It's funny you say that. I watched the Global Cycling Network video where they experimented taking ketones in a workout and compared it to not. And they described it very similar to the way you just described it, in that their performance improved a little bit in the actual workout. In fact, one of the two guys that experimented with it had a pretty significant improvement in his, it was a 45-minute effort. I can't remember the exact distance on Swift, but they both said that they just felt more like they were ready to attack the workout than usual. They were just more switched on and more eager to hurt, which is, I think, what I've heard other people describe when they've taken it as well. It's almost like they're just more mentally stimulated to the point where they are the opposite of, you know, sometimes it's like, especially when you're in a really hard training block, sometimes I just go out for workouts and I'm struggling to find that motivation and desire to want to really work that day. I'm just really mentally flat.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the best way to sort of combat that feeling. And I was using it in my last marathon build up and I really noticed that was helping in that regard. But there's a whole other range of benefits as well that I discovered and then realized I wasn't the only one discovering them. So one's recovery.
Yeah.
I'm curious on how that works.
Yeah.
How does it actually help? I feel like my recovery was better in my last training block, and it's hard to pinpoint exactly why, but I mean, I was using ketones for the first time.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that? How does it really aid recovery? Because I've heard that over and over again from cyclists and all sorts of sports people that have claimed that their muscle recovery has been improved.
Yeah, really interesting topic, and it's almost too good to be true that something can help you in performance and recovery. One way to think about it is, like, when we think about water, that, like, drink, if you're dehydrated, that's going to help you perform. It could also help you to recover. That it's not, like, out of the realm of what we're already aware of, that if something is enough of a nutritional primitive, like, far enough up the pyramid, it's going to help everything that you do. Mm-hmm. Water is a great example. Water is, like, the primitive of all primitives. Yeah. But that ketones, we think of them as an adaptive fuel, that you have a certain energy demand when you're performing and you have a certain energy demand when you're recovering. Like, if you're at rest, but you ran hard earlier today, your body is doing more metabolism than someone who didn't run today. Like, that recovery process is active. Like, there's process going on, like rebuilding muscle, repacking glycogen into your muscles. There's a lot of process going on inside your body as part of recovery. So having the right kind of fuel, the right kind of nutrition available, will accelerate recovery. There's a really interesting study done with this Belgian group of cyclists where it was a 3-week training block, and they were having ketones 3 times a day, including right before bedtime and twice else throughout the day. And they showed at the end of that 3-week training block, this was meant to mimic Tour de France training, so like hard training for 3 weeks, yeah, like no rest. And they showed that, so aside from the ketones, the groups were both allowed to eat ad libitum, meaning as much as they want. The only difference was they had ketones. The placebo group thought they were drinking something crazy tasting. So it was placebo controlled. So every group thought they were drinking something, but the placebo group was drinking crazy tasting water. And the ketone group, what they showed at the end of that 3 weeks is that they had significantly higher, 15% higher power output on the final time trial on that 3 weeks.
15%.
Yeah. And so there's this immediate benefit on the performance, but then, like, if you're able to speed up recovery. So there's a couple inside of that. There's a couple of mechanisms of action on that we've seen. One is the increase in muscle protein resynthesis. So when you run, you get all these micro tears in your muscles, and that to repair those is what gives you strength. Like, you make these micro tears, and when you repair it, you get a stronger muscle. The process of repairing takes energy, and that ketones are able to accelerate muscle protein resynthesis. And then there's a separate mechanism called muscle glycogen reuptake, where we're talking about the carb, glucose, sugar, glycogen, energy systems, all the same. When it's stored in your muscles, it's in the form of, it's called glycogen, basically stored glucose. And when you can store glycogen in your liver or in your muscles. Your muscles are basically these big batteries for glycogen, and you want that. Like, you want to replenish your glycogen stores after an effort before the next day's effort. Basically, ketones accelerate muscle glycogen resynthesis. So it's like if you have a phone charger and then like a faster phone charger, like the faster one, you will recharge your glycogen batteries faster if you have the same amount of carbohydrates and you are also having ketones on top.
Again, well explained. I mean, you're a 2:42 marathon runner yourself, so you're able to really put these studies or this research into play as such. I guess you've experimented for some time around timing of when you would consume these to best perform in training and racing. I'd love to hear stories about how this works. I mean, most people listening are runners, probably most up half marathon. I would love to hear about your real world experiences of using this in training, in racing. I mean, the questions that are in my head are like, are you consuming it like mid marathon? Are you taking it on an empty stomach in the morning? Is that how best it? Yeah. I mean, I'd love to hear anything that you've been experimenting with here.
Yeah. So on a race day, like on a full effort, a race day, what I go by is a 3-to-1 ratio of carbs to ketones. So every 30 grams of carbs, I'm taking 10 grams of ketone IQ. And the easy way to think of that is that you can see literally, they make a point on Morton or Goo or SIS, whatever gel or powder you're using, is like they make it really clear. Like the Morton, I believe, is like 180 grams in the bottle. So if you're putting 180 grams, like you divide that by 3, put in that much ketone and keep that ratio. So what I would say is, not reinventing the wheel here, that like whenever you are taking carbohydrates, people have their own methodology. Like I drink this drink like for the 90 minutes before the race, and then on the start line, I slam a goo, and then every 15 miles or every 15 minutes or every 3 miles, whatever you're currently doing, I would say don't mess with that. But adding ketones in a 1-to-3 ratio to the carbs that you're taking. So it's if a goo shot has 20 grams of carbohydrates, and every time you take two of those, that's 40 grams, rounding some numbers here. If you take two of those, take a shot of Ketone IQ.
Right.
Every third one, have a shot of Ketone IQ.
And is one of the Ketone IQ shots, is that 10 grams?
Right, yeah, that's 10
right,
grams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And that ratio, it seems you can modulate up and down from there. Some people respond really well to ketones. Some people modulate that ratio up and down. But that's a good starter ratio, is 3-to-1. And then, you can modulate from there. I'm laughing because I just did this.
Yeah, we want to hear stories.
I just did this ultra marathon.
Yeah.
I paced my friend for ultra marathon. I, to be clear, did not do the ultra marathon myself. I did pace a 20-mile segment of a 250-mile. A lot of conversations along the way, a lot of folks there were using Ketone IQ. And those super endurance events, you really can't use carbohydrate because you just deplete it too quickly. Like we were saying earlier, that energy store, it's just it's too small of a battery. You need to be really fat adapted. You need to really, really good at that. To a point where the guy who won it outright, he said 90% of his calories came from raw milk.
Oh, wow.
Unprocessed, okay. Just raw milk, which is very fat and protein dominant. And the guy, his handle is the low carb runner. He's very dialed into the fat adaptation world. And for someone like that, Ketone IQ is really interesting because it goes through that pathway that you're mainly really good at. It's your fat ketone pathway is good. When you go and have carbohydrates, it kind of it's a different pathway. And the super ultra guys, a lot of them will go low carb. I know Zach Bitter, another just prolific and ultra guy, eats pretty keto or pretty darn close to it, because you want, when you're doing those longer distances, it's not about speed so much as being able to maintain zone 2 for 70 hours straight. And that is going to require a massive battery and fast. You don't have to be super fast, but you need to be reasonably fast at drawing on that. So a lot of ultra community, they're really dialed in on fat adaptation, exogenous ketones. And then marathon's kind of in the middle, because it's if you're doing a 5K, you're going to be really glycolytic. You're going to be mainly burning sugar. I don't know how much fat adaptation is going to affect the recovery benefits. Maybe the mental benefits will be interesting there, but certainly marathon. And then as you draw out longer and longer distance, anything over an hour, I would say ketones start being really relevant. And then the longer you go, the more dependent you are on that fat ketone
system. Okay. And as for timing, so you sort of went through how you would ideally position this on race day. Personally, I've been taking it first thing in the morning and then not really having anything for about 30 to 60 minutes before I leave. Is that how do you consume this on a day-to-day basis so that you feel the best sort of mental and physical effects from it?
Yeah. So outside of being a runner, just being as a human.
Yeah, if you were just generally, yeah.
Yeah, the first thing of the day, I have it alongside I have glass of lemon water, I have some omega-3s, I have Ketone IQ in the morning. I actually have that an hour and a half before coffee. I try to not have coffee immediately when I wake up I'm very pro coffee. I don't want to develop too much of a Pavlovian response, needing coffee the minute I get out of bed. And I also think there's a natural wake cycle, natural release of hormones that your body does when you wake up, move around, see the sunlight. I like to get there naturally, and then I'll have a cup of coffee. Anyway, Ketone IQ first thing in the morning, I like a lot. A lot of people might be familiar. One of the ways I might explain it at a cocktail party, like you asked in the beginning, is that a number of people are familiar with bulletproof coffee, or the idea of putting MCT or fat into your coffee, which is great. The reason that people do that is because that fat then turns into ketones. So you put MCT. MCT is a medium chain triglyceride. So it's a form of fat that, because of the carbon chain length, it relatively easily converts into ketones. What we figured out how to do is just skip a step. So you get a much more pure, much more pronounced dose of ketones right away. So it's the same general concept of having bulletproof coffee. And why, again, people have that because it's brain energy, because it's satiating. Like a lot of times when you have sugar, you get hungry again shortly after versus when you are having things that are higher in fat, ketones, it's more satiating. So all of the reason why someone might like bulletproof coffee, Ketone IQ like delivers on that in a more like immediate, pronounced way.
I'm glad you touched on the appetite thing with sugar because I've noticed that as well. And again, one of those things that I was like, is this just me or not? And I start Googling and I'm realizing a lot of other people are also experiencing a little bit of a suppression in appetite.
Yeah.
I just don't feel the need, especially for whatever reason, I've never really been too much of a like a high sugar. I mean, I'm just generally pretty general diet, but I find that I don't feel like I need such high sugary carbohydrate food. I just don't feel the need, like the desire for them so much if I'm taking this throughout the day, which I guess over time would be a pretty handy weight control tool, especially for someone training for an event that does require them to be not necessarily as light as they can be, but you know, in a good stable weight, like in a marathon. So how does that work as well?
Yeah.
I mean, you probably have already basically covered it by answering the other questions, but I thought there's just so many interesting sort of different benefits to it that really fascinated me.
Yeah, there's a study done on the appetite control effect where, again, it was double-blind, placebo-controlled, and the group that got ketones, they looked at two things. They looked at ghrelin levels, which is hunger hormone, so just like objective hormonal level of hunger, and they also had participants rate like how hungry do you feel, so subjective sense of hunger. And on both measures, the ketone group, they felt it was isocaloric, so people were given 70 calories of ketones and then 70 calories of dextrose sugar, and in the sugar group, people felt significantly hungrier after 90 minutes, 3 hours, after all the timestamps, and their ghrelin levels, which again is the hunger hormone, were higher in the sugar group. So in the ketone group, just the opposite of lower levels of ghrelin, so appetite hormone was suppressed, and people just felt subjectively less hungry. And it stands to reason, like different diets satiate us differently. That like if you have like hard-boiled eggs, avocados, like things are generally higher in fat and protein, that tends to be more satiating. If you have the same amount of calories of like a donut or candy, like I think a lot of people have that like intuitive experience where you get like really energetic, almost like hyper excited, and then you crash and then you're like hungry again. That sugar has very much this like roller coaster effect. Like you eat something with a lot of sugar in it, it elevates your blood sugar. You need to release a lot of insulin to address that. And then once the sugar goes away, you have this high insulin level that's sending a signal that you're still hungry. So like fat and ketones don't spike your blood sugar. They don't spike your insulin. So you don't have that trailing, like I feel hungry 90 minutes. It's more like a smooth curve. So in general, like this is not something like magical to ketones. I would just say the ketones are like every food is somewhere on this spectrum of like how satiating it is per calorie. Like steak, really satiating. Like people, that's what's kind of interesting when people do like the carnivore diet. And I'm not like here advocating for that outright for everyone, but it is interesting. A lot of people, when they do this carnivore diet, they say, hey, I like can't overeat. Like I try to eat 3,000 calories a day of steak. It's hard. Like you just get satiated. You had a steak at lunch. Like you're not really hungry when dinner comes around. That like there's classes of food that are more satiating per calorie and classes of food that are less satiating per calorie. And ketones happen to be more satiating per calorie.
Mm-hmm. Definitely have noticed that myself. Now this is a relatively new claim by the internet or studies, but EPO, it seems that some people in some studies have claimed that there is a raise in EPO levels. Now EPO, you know, if you're somewhat familiar, it's a naturally produced substance in the body. Taking the injectable EPO is banned in sports. You can raise your own EPO levels by spending time at altitude. Now there's rumors out there that the ketones can boost EPO in the blood. I mean, is that yet confirmed? How does that work?
There was a study done by the researcher named Evans, and they showed that ketones increased post-exercise blood EPO levels, which is super interesting. It ties in with some of what we were talking about earlier, which is like the ability to have better blood oxygenation at altitude. EPO helps you. The reason people like it is EPO helps you hang on to more oxygen in your blood in general. So like that's really advantageous in a race because you're able to, you're just more oxygen saturated. You can do more metabolism. So it seems like there is a like slight acute, like meaning an immediate, if I just took ketones right now, like that will, that increases post-exercise EPO, and that like chronically, like if you're spending more time with elevated ketone levels, like over days, weeks, that like has a more pronounced elevation in EPO. Mm-hmm. Again, it's something that your body makes naturally. Ketones also something your body makes naturally. Yeah. And so I don't think a large concern around it because like the amount of rise is like, it's all within band of like what your body like could be doing. Yeah. We're not talking about like injecting like a Superman level EPO. It's like you have a slight increase, but you could also have a slight increase by like sleeping better and like having better recovery protocol in general.
Training.
Yeah. Training more. Like exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard Dan Plouze, a triathlon coach, currently coach of Sam Long, posting about that recently. So I found that of interest. It seems that ketones have been used in cycling for a while. I feel like in the running world, at least from my understanding, it's still really new. You know, Sarah Hall's obviously a HVMN athlete. There's a few others out there. Spencer Brown, athlete special. It's still kind of unknown, though, amongst the masses.
Yeah.
Cycling, I mean, do you have any background as to why cycling picked up earlier? Because I research anything that I become interested in. And a while back, I was watching videos about guys taking bottles of ketones that were thousands of dollars that they bought. This is back in like, 2017, 2018, when you were just sort of just getting started in that field.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's been somewhat popular in cycling for a while. Is there any other sports that you know of that it's sort of been, you know, been used pretty thoroughly, or is it just really cycling?
It's a really good read on it that cycling picked up the most to begin with. Like all 8 billion of us are doing metabolism all the time, and ketones can help everyone. It's really interesting. It helped cyclists out the most, or I should say that it's not that it helps everyone. The reason that cyclists are so drawn to it is because every cyclist has their exact like wattage meter. Like, they know their functional threshold of power. Like cyclists are major nerds. A lot of runners were also nerds, but cyclists are like super nerds because like you can see to like exact decimal, like what's your wattage right now, this minute. And it's all training on like power output. What's your watts per kilogram? Again, runners can be that, but it's a step more removed. We can go with heart rate training. We can look at, there are like power meters for runners, and like it's always been like in the discussion, kind of like 1 year out, a few years out. Cyclists are like, they just have like robust data. And so something that can increase performance recovery, it's easier to pick up in a cyclist because the data is just all there. Like it can also help a soccer or football player, right? But like if you're a soccer player, okay, you're even further removed because like stamina matters, but like so do six other things. So does teamwork, ball handling. Like there's more noise around it. At the cellular level, like a boost to your metabolism is still a boost to your metabolism. It's just that like, did this soccer team do better because their midfielder is really clever, or because it's harder to measure. We're again like going back to just like pure cyclists, like they're so dialed on the numbers that it's easy to see if something like has a, you know, shifts your performance 5-10%. Like it's very easy to apples to apples compare. Also, it's just interesting. I think just the culture, like cyclists, they have, you know, $4,000 or $5,000, $8,000 bike. They have, the kit's really expensive. They're like the idea of like investing in a super fuel. Not so far apart. Some runners are that way. Oh, I'm gonna get the Alpha Flies. I'm gonna get the like creme de la creme. But a lot of runners I know, I'm sure you know, I'm sure a lot of people listening in are like salt of the earth types. Like, I just lace up. I go for a run. I wear my dad's shirt from when he used to run in the 70s. School. Like old school. And then that's part of the beauty and joy of running as well. Is like you don't need the $8,000 bike. You don't need to think about how aerodynamic you are and what spandex you're wearing. You can literally just go run, and there is something beautiful about the sport. So I do think that there's aspects of the sport that are very pure and like not necessarily like eager to jump on the latest tech, But there are aspects of the sport that are. Like, we've seen the effect, like how shoes have changed so much in the last 5 years. I would say like cyclists are like super ready and down to like get slightly more aerodynamic, like swap out a part for titanium, like swap out. This is like they're very dialed.
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely agree with that. I think running's heading that way too, though, as a mass. I think thinking back five, I mean, I've been running for 18 years, and thinking back 5 years ago, I think it was a lot more old school, at least the people that I know. Yeah, people are definitely adopting more tech nowadays.
It's interesting. I think that the culture in general, like the human body, is becoming a really interesting platform where the access to information about what's going on inside your body is increasing. Like right now, I'm actually wearing a like continuous glucose and ketone monitor in my arm right now.
It measures ketones as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've had the glucose monitor, but not the ketone.
Right. Yeah. There's like Sapiens.
Sapiens is the one I've used. Yeah.
So there's a proliferation of technology, right? There's Aura, there's Whoop, there's Apple. Like there's all these devices that are showing us a read what's going on inside our body. Where 5-10 years ago, you had to make a special effort to do that. You had to like invest and think and like plan it out. You know, you had to stitch some stuff together, download some weird looking spreadsheets, like format it, like what CSV looks kind of crazy. Let me make it into a graph. And now it's all just like really nice UX. Yeah. Like my aunt has a Apple Watch. Like everyone's like walking around with ability to see what's going on inside their body. So agreeing with what you're saying that like it seems like running has shifted to more tech. I would say like as a culture, people have shifted more towards the more awareness on what's going on inside of their body because the proliferation of sensors, reduction in price, that like the human body is a platform for innovation. There's just a lot of innovation on like sensors, hardware, and I think the culture is moving there.
Mm-hmm. How are ketones produced?
Yeah.
At a really basic level. Yeah.
Yeah. The joke is always like, do we have just like a gymnasium full of people running on treadmills, like making their own endogenous ketones and extracting out? No. That would be, that's too clever. That's crazy. So the way we make it is fermentation process that basically you can take genetically modified bacterium and they're modified such that you feed them something really like regular, like sugar is basic commodity, and the bacteria as a byproduct produce the target molecule. In our case, it's a pure ketone dial.
Okay.
And this can be used in principle for other, like many other things. You can use it to make like a flavor. You can use it to make a pharmaceutical. You can use it to make like a multitude of different arbitrary molecules. It's kind of like, one way to think about it is it's like it high-tech kombucha factory. It's like we're, kombucha is like, okay, you put some tea leaves and you ferment it and then you get kombucha. This is like very specifically engineered tea leaves so that when they ferment, they create the ketone and then you like filter out all of the predecessors. So it's cradle to grave sustainable. It's like everything about it is very like earth friendly too. There's another way to do it that is like petroleum based. That this is part of what we have evolved over the years. Because again, we made the first at-scale batch in 2017 and started working with the DoD shortly thereafter. And part of what we've updated along the way is being more, besides getting the cost down, improving the flavor, is also just being more sustainable, treading more lightly, and being more clever on how we source, you know, like what manufacturing partners that we work with. So instead this is not to go on too much tangent. Like petroleum is really magical. Like you can make all sorts of things out of petroleum. That's why we're constantly pulling it out of the earth. You can make fabrics and textiles and foods and all sorts of everything. It's very robust because of the chemical structure. But one of the things I'm proud of that like we've been able to do as a team is to be able to migrate over to a like fully sustainable fermentation-based process.
Very interesting. Definitely agree that the taste has improved. I mean, I do want to ask straight up. I mean, we've talked about all these incredible benefits that come as a result of them. The main ones for me have been mental clarity, recovery for sure, appetite, you know, slightly suppressed as well, which of course you have to be a little bit careful of if you're training for a marathon and you really need the carbohydrates and protein. But are there any downsides other than, you know, the taste is something that some people have a hard time with? I think the latest version is actually pretty good. Like, as in, it's not terrible. Should I say? It's definitely, when I consume it, it's not like when I first tried it. What would have been about a year and a half ago, it was definitely more challenging to consume then. But are there any other sort of potential negative side effects or downsides to consuming, or is it just, I really haven't heard of any more.
Yeah. It's the taste is always the elephant in the room. Like it's gotten less crazy tasting over time. Like right now, when you buy it, it's in the functional wellness shot. So we're in like Sprouts.
I was about to say Sprouts. Congratulations on getting the Sprouts. That's a recent.
Yeah. It's huge. They're nationwide grocery store, awesome partner, and we're in a lot of like smoothie shops, and like, we're in like Earth Bar at Equinox. We're in a lot of really cool spots, and we always sit next to like the functional wellness shots, like the apple cider vinegar or the like turmeric ginger shot. So thankfully, like everything in that category tastes a little crazy. Like I don't know, the last time you had like a turmeric ginger shot, like it kind of smacks you in the face.
Oh yeah.
So we're in good company where we sit at retail. It has a taste to it for sure. Like, and it's formulated for function, right? It's formulated to work, get a job done. You can measure directly your blood ketone levels. If you want to be really objective about it, you can see my blood ketone levels rise. I drink Ketone IQ, 30 minutes later, 60 minutes later, my ketone levels objectively rise. So we're like almost to a fault. We're like hyper-focused on the functional. And so we've added nothing to it. There's no sugar. There's no, like, we've been tread very lightly on the flavors that we add. So there's no, like, there's a lot of different sweeteners that you could, that one could use, but some of those are like interfere with your metabolism. Like, there's sucralose, there's erythritol. Like, those are things that we don't use because they like, yes, they're not sugar, but they like have some properties that are similar to sugar. So we've made it just like as pure of a ketone as possible. We use monk fruit, which is like the lowest side effect profile of any like non-sugar sweetener.
Yeah.
So we made it like very pure and made it taste as darn good as we can within that. And at the end of the day, it's just like as pure of a, you think about it as like as pure of a ketone as possible, with making like no compromises on that, but then that has made it taste, I don't know, it tastes how it is.
Yeah.
As far as other downsides in general, not really. Like, you shouldn't, like, if you just, like, drink 10 servings all at once, you might have a bad time. I wouldn't do that. Yeah. Like, don't, like take more than you should of it. But in general, there's not, like, a chronic use issue. Like, that was a big part of what we did to get it through FDA, like several years ago, was, like, 30-day safety study, people having it multiple times a day for 30 days, and just seeing like, okay, yeah, like all blood biomarkers, everything's like solid on it. And again, it's one of those things like your body makes. It's like you can think about it like eating protein. It's like you probably shouldn't have like too much protein, but generally like you're not going to overdose on protein. Mm-hmm. Like caffeine is way scarier, right? Like you'd have like, if you had like 10 cups of coffee all at once, you might have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Like caffeine, like too much caffeine all at once is
dangerous.
Too much water, too much protein. Like, yeah, like I wouldn't over, like you can die from having too much water. But like within normal, it's like, it's a substrate. It's like your body will use it as a fuel. Like it's a metabolic substrate. Your body will put it to use if it's present. And then it's like, is very used to having that around again, because you make it naturally anyway. So the levels that like a shot of Ketone IQ can get you to, again, are like very completely within band of where you would be if you did a blood ketone, if you did a fasted run and did a blood ketone level afterwards, your body would have made a significant amount of ketones. You'd be at like 1 or 2 millimole blood ketones. Like that's about how much Ketone IQ gives you as well. Mm-hmm. So like we're within the band of like what is physiologically normal. It's not like 10x or something. It's not like hitting it with a sledgehammer. It's like giving you around what your body could be doing normally, just and then some.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When it comes to this, I feel like from my perspective, having kind of studied this space for the last year or so, the market for ketones is new. It's growing quickly. There's a bunch of other, HVM is one of the leaders. Is there such thing, like, you know, when you speak about caffeine, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's a difference in quality between different caffeines, and if there is, it's really minimal. Is there such a thing in the ketone space as like poor quality ketones and high quality ketones? is that such a thing? Like, could you have, like with substances, protein, for example, you can get sort of like high quality, low quality, and you want to ideally avoid the low quality.
Right.
How does that work in the ketone space? Because most people would have no idea, and I don't either.
Yeah, it's a really robust, active field, and we've updated our formula even along the way. And as an analogy, when you look at like the carbohydrate space, it's always been updating, right? Since like the latest carb gel from Morton or SIS is going to have a myriad of different types of carbohydrates within it.
Fructose and
It'll have like maltodextrose, fructose, glucose, like in a sense to like parallelize out the types of carbohydrates. So the point being that like even carbohydrates, not like a completely rested field, like there continues to be innovation on how to best deliver carbohydrate to an athlete. So ketone space all similarly very active. There's better and worse ways to deliver ketones. So what we have is a pure ketone dial, and that converts very quickly. There's one step to become directly just blood ketones. So that happens in a matter of minutes, and your body can regulate it too, like when that conversion takes place. So that helps to make a longer, gentler curve. So you're not like spiking your ketones. Your body's basically like releasing ketones, converting it from ketone dial to blood ketones. There's some like control mechanism on that. There's other ways to deliver ketones. So there's a couple other like buckets of categories. There's something called ketone esters. So our version one of our product was a ketone ester. We then updated to a pure ketone dial. It's going a little chemistry on it. So an ester is like not this magical fancy word. Ester is just like bonding two molecules together with ester bond. And the ester that we use, there's a number of different esters out there that have different properties to them, but the ester that we used was half ketone dial, which is now what we have 100% of. It was half ketone dial and half ketone acid. That's what we had in our V1. And we saw that that had a worse performance profile than pure dial. So we liked it. It was a proof of concept that we got out of the gates. That's like how we initially got in with the DOD work. And part of what we saw there was looking at different blood ketone curves. It's called like the pharmacokinetics. Like there's a certain, if you have 10 grams of ketones, there's a curve that you can see on your blood ketone levels. And you can look at like how much does it spike? How long are you at peak? How quickly does it diminish? And the pure ketone dial has a really nice like shape to the curve where it like rises you into this optimal performance zone, and it keeps you there for a long amount of time, where again, there's a lot of different ways to esterize things. And what we saw in our V1 ester was it basically was like too spiky and then dissipated too quickly. Sure. And then it was also like quite expensive, and we figured out a way to like make a pure dial that performs better. There's also a third bucket out there. People are like Googling ketones in the background. Is like there's something called ketone salts, which is a very cheap way to make ketones. The one drawback on it is that you're making, it's kind of in the name, it's called a ketone salt, where like the way that you're making it is you end up with a molecule that's half ketone, half salt. So in order to have 10 grams of ketones, you have to have 10 grams of salt, which is a lot of salt.
Yeah.
So like just for frame of reference, if you're having like electrolytes, like you'd be having like a couple hundred milligrams, maybe 1 gram if you're really like loading up. So we're talking like to get like a relevant dosage of ketones is not possible with ketone salts, but they're very cheap. That's like the interesting thing about them is that like if you want a little bit of ketones, you can get ketone salts, but you're not able to get like physiologically impactful doses via the salts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really appreciate you educating me further on this space. I guess the last thing I'd like to ask is like, what does the future look like for HVMN and also ketones? I mean, is there more products coming? How might they look? Of course, it's almost like, you know, this is in a similar way, not comparing it directly to a carbohydrate, but in a way it's a fuel source. But like, what does the future look like for this space? It's so new. I'm just curious to know. I tell people all the time, once I fully wrap my head around how it worked and the benefits, and we didn't even really get to the speaking too much about the benefits outside of endurance. Sports, of course, there's many. But can you speak to what's happening, what you think this space will go in the next 5 to 10 years or even beyond?
Yeah. Really excited for the benefits beyond just endurance sports. That's a lot of where we are headed over the next 5-10 years. So the reason that it helps athletes so much, again, is the central governor effect, the brain-mediated effects, the fact that ketones are brain fuel. And as you can imagine, like, we're all using our brain all the time. It's really relevant on mile 20 of a marathon, but it's also relevant if you have a high-stress occupation. It's relevant if you're facing cognitive decline in old age or due to other reasons. Your brain, obviously, super important organ, the most important organ, and governs everything else going on in your body. So having a alternative fuel for your brain is super impactful. So one of the areas that I'm really excited about is we have a pilot study going with the Naval Health Research Center on traumatic brain injury, TBI, concussions, that basically when you have a concussion, there is this damage that's done at the moment of impact, and there's swelling that takes place, and this all interferes with brain energy metabolism. You have a reduction in metabolism in the brain as a result. Specifically, like, glucose metabolism goes down. Ketones go through this other pathway, right? They're like, I think we've established it. Like, this fat ketone pathway is different from glucose pathway. So ketones don't require as much oxygen. They don't require insulin to metabolize. So they don't require the same things. They go through this different pathway. So if you're in this state of like brain energy decrement, it's really advantageous to have ketones present. So there's been interesting studies, not just like with TBI, but also like with Alzheimer's. There was a big study done with the ketogenic diet where Alzheimer's patients were able to recover cognitive function when they did a ketogenic diet because Alzheimer's was interfering with their brain's ability to metabolize glucose, but not ketones. So ketones were, again, through a ketogenic diet, were able to recover brain activity. And so now it's really interesting because ketogenic diet is really hard, especially if someone, I mean, just hard in general. It's also hard if you have Alzheimer's to do a ketogenic diet. So the idea of having an exogenous ketone, the ability to like directly, okay, drink this and raise your ketone levels is really interesting. Because I can, like this, I can say if I had a bump in the head, if I had a ski accident, bike accident, whatever, if I had a bump in the head, I would immediately go to raise my ketone levels. Like just having as a prophylactic, like abundance of substrate, abundance of ketones present to be able to rescue any brain cells that are in need of energy, that's massive. So where I'm at on it is I have enough understanding of the space. I personally, or any friend of mine that got knocked in the head, I would say like you gotta get into ketosis immediately. And the science is really interesting there around like ketogenic diet and other ways of raising ketones. And we're basically just connecting the dots on like, okay, well, what about exogenous ketone drinks? So the same mechanisms of action hold true there. So really exciting to see where it goes with TBI, with Alzheimer's. Everyone, if we're so lucky, like gets old, right? Like it's not this like, oh, old people or other, like we're all old people one day if we're lucky to live to that age. So I think it's super impactful. It's, I think, special if, you know, it's cool if you can smash a marathon PR. Like that's great. I think it's even more impactful if we can help people to elevate their just day-by-day function. So I'm excited to continue rolling out the map. We talk about how like cyclists are really drawn to it, endurance athletes now more broadly. I think athletes are always the like test subject on like if you invented caffeine, if caffeine didn't exist and you invented caffeine tomorrow, who would you go test it on, right? Like you might take it to some like sprinters, some runners in general, and it's like, okay, this is going to be really obvious that this helps someone run better. But then broadly, it's like, well, truck drivers and busy parents and all sorts of people, a billion cups of coffee I drink every day. And so we're kind of at that spot with ketones where it's like, okay, it works in this population where people are really dialing on their performance, like elite athletes, elite operators. But the same findings hold true if you're a knowledge worker, if you're jamming on spreadsheets, writing essays, writing emails. It also holds true if you're facing cognitive decline for different reasons. So really excited to like roll out the map there. Like never wanted to, as much as I am an athlete and love the athlete community, never wanted to bracket the innovation here just in as like a sports nutrition product. Just like the potential around it is massive.
Yeah, for sure. from all I've understood, yeah, definitely mirroring. But yeah, once again, huge thank you for your time coming on to educate people listening. Also, a few questions I didn't know the answer to, so I'm glad I was able to put it on the recording so other people could learn as well. Sprouts, you mentioned a few health food shops. You can buy it online directly from HVMN. Anywhere else, or are they the main places for now?
Those are the main places. You can also find us on Amazon.
Yeah, okay.
I think the easiest is always going to be HVMN.com. That's just like we are fully in control there, and it's a nice education, checkout experience, all that. Amazon, obviously, super convenient. You can find us in Sprouts. You can find us in Earth Bar at Equinox. A lot of bike shops and running shoe stores all smattered around. We have a store locator on our site, so if someone's like rushing out to get one right now, we're on Instacart.
Yep.
So
cool. Yeah. Awesome. Once again, really appreciate your time and looking forward to seeing what the future holds in the space.
Thanks, Matt. It's a lot of fun.
That was Michael Brand, founder at HVMN, speaking all about HVMN's Ketone IQ supplement and ketones in general. And once again, you can score a 20% off discount by using the code SWEATELITE at checkout at hvmn.com. You can also find HVMN's Ketone IQ at Sprouts if you are based in the USA and you would like to try a small sample. But as Michael also mentions in the final minutes there, it's also available at Amazon. Don't forget to check out the Kenya training camp as well if it's of interest to you. Check out www.sweatelite.co/Kenya to learn more about the Sweat Elite Kenya training camp. And you can come and join us training at high altitude at the end of August through September. And it will especially be beneficial for those preparing for a marathon, half marathon, or a 5K and 10K race in the months of October, November, and December for spending that time at altitude just beforehand as well. So do check out www.sweatelite.co/Kenya to learn more about our Kenya training camp happening this August and September and to book your place today.